From WBUR Boston, I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a sports story. Little-known, inner-city, all-black high school football, overcoming the odds. Sound familiar? Well, think again. When documentary filmmakers Daniel Lindsay and TJ Martin went south to Manassas High School in Memphis, Tennessee, they couldn't have known they were stumbling on one of the most thrilling, intricate, tear-jerking stories out there. This hour, On Point, Oscar-nominated Undefeated, and sports storytelling retold. You could join the conversation. Did you play high school football? Know how much it meant? Have you seen Undefeated? You could also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And one of the things that makes this documentary stand out is head coach Bill Courtney. Here, he tells us some of his interesting philosophy.
This is the way you build yourself. If you build yourself this way and handle yourself this way and have character, you get to play football. And winning will take care of itself because young men of character and discipline and commitment end up winning in life and they end up winning in football. Well, when you flip it and the foundation of what you're doing is football and then you hope all that other stuff follows, well, then you think football builds character, which it does not. Football reveals character.
Football coach denigrating the power of football. The interesting Manassas coach Bill Courtney, who will join us later in the hour. But first, from Los Angeles, the Oscar-nominated directors of Undefeated, Daniel Lindsay and TJ Martin. Welcome, guys.
Hey,
thank you.
How goes?
Yes. So how did you, unless you subscribe to Horrible High School Teams Weekly, I'm wondering how you ever found out about the Manassas Tigers, who, and I will detail how bad they weren't exactly lighting the world on fire.
Yeah, well, they we actually found the story through one of the players on the team, and who is one of the focuses of our documentary, O.C. Brown. He was kind of out of nowhere became a highly recruited lineman out of Manassas, a high school that really never had any real recruits. And our producer happened to go to the University of Tennessee, and he kind of has an unhealthy obsession with their football team to the point that he follows their recruiting online. Mm-hmm. And suddenly this name, O.C. Brown, kept coming up, and he didn't know who he was, and he needed to know who he was, so he Googled his name. And up came this article about O.C. Living with one of his volunteer coaches during the week to get tutoring in an area of East Memphis, which is very kind of affluent area in Memphis, and then living with his grandmother on the weekend in North Memphis, which is a kind of at-risk, kind of poverty-stricken area. And that article was what interested us in the beginning. It seemed like an opportunity to tell a kind of intimate coming-of-age story of a kid being shuttled between two seemingly disparate worlds.
Well, even though I was just going to say, even though the movie The Blind Side wasn't out, it surely must have struck you that, wow, we're talking about the city of Memphis and a black offensive lineman who's living with a white family. And you had to know the races involved because the picture illustrating that story had a picture of the coach and the kid. So how much was it pitched as, hey, this is like The Blind Side Redux?
Well, that would require us being smart enough to have actually like read The Blind Side or know about it beforehand. I mean, our producer Rich knew the story, and he had
read the book prior to that.
Yeah. And so when he sent the article, he said, you know, have you heard of the book The Blind Side? And so yeah, I mean, originally, I guess TJ, would you say the race was something that was interesting to us in the beginning. We thought something we thought it would be much more about, but then when we went to Memphis the first time to look at and meet OC, that was when we met Bill Courtney, the coach, and you know, Bill telling us stories of the team, and then, you know, we heard the history of Manassas, and Bill just told us a lot of anecdotes of things that had happened in the past, and that was when we decided we were going to shift our focus and tell the story of a season at Manassas High School.
Right. Yeah.
And we should also note that from the outside there are elements that are may parallel that of Michael Orr's story from The Blind Side, but the actual storyline of like OC's story and Michael Orr's story, The Blind Side story, or at least the movie, are completely different. You know, the movie is much more about kind of a love story between a mother and a surrogate son, whereas O.C.'s, you know, the themes of O.C.'s story is really much more about kind of a group of people coming together. It's really about taking advantage of opportunity.
Well, let's meet O.C. for a second through your movie. Here he is talking about what he thinks football can do for him.
I want to say football is everything to me, but football, I know it's going to be my way out. Because, I mean, academically, I'm not that all. I'm not smart. I'm smart in a way, but I'm not the smartest kid in the world. So I think I'll make it playing football.
A nice, sweet, likable kid saying academically, I'm not that awesome. I'm smart in a way. likable, except if you're an opposing linebacker or lineman who just gets leveled. Another crazy thing, and you were just drawn to this story of this compelling kid, and then you met Bill Courtney, who told you tales of how bad Manassas High School was. I have the, I think, all-time record of the school, and I'll start in 94, and here's how Manassas High School did. 0-10, 1-9, 0-10, 0-9, in 98, 0-10. 1-9, 0-10, 2001, 1-9, 1-9. We're talking about a decade of football teams where the most wins they ever got in a season was one game, and then they maybe had a couple three-win seasons. And then Bill Courtney comes along. First, before I ask you to describe him, why? Why was he attracted to perhaps the most horrible high school football in the state of Tennessee, if not the South?
I think it's more out of circumstance than anything. Bill owns a lumber company that happens to be situated about two blocks from Manassas High School, and one of his employees had gone over, and one of his employees wanted to volunteer and help at just an inner city football program, and so he went over there and started, you know, cooking pre-game meals for the team and stuff. And he came back to work one day and he said, Bill, you know, and Bill used to be a high school football coach before he was a businessman. And he said, Bill, there's a couple of guys over here who are really good athletes, but they only have 17 players and it's a really bad situation. And, you know, maybe you could go over there and help them out a little bit. And so Bill went over there one day after work and, as he says, never left. He just fell in love with the kids and fell in love with the idea, I think, of building a program and being – hopefully a mentor to some guys in a similar way that his coaches were a mentor to him.
Were you guys high school athletes or football players?
Dan laughs. Yeah, no.
This is the radio, so you can't see us, but clearly we would not be good football players.
I don't know, holders or something?
No. I did play high school basketball, but okay. Football was actually – I never followed football prior to this film. I actually had kind of a distaste for football until making this film, and I actually have grown – extremely appreciative of the sport itself. I mean, it's actually pretty brilliant. To me, it's much more of a like the strategy is much more of a chess match, which I think is pretty amazing.
So, but I asked the question because when you first met Bill Courtney, were you immediately taken, or did some antenna go up? Like, I think we've seen this Svengali of the gridiron before. Is this guy really what he appears? Because what he appears to be is, you know, filled with anecdotes and things to say to inspire a team, and, you know, a combination of Vince Lombardi and Leo Biscaglia, if you know who he is. He was the love doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, so did you take him at face value?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, it's funny to say this now because Bill's become like such a close friend of ours. But, you know, I was cautious of him at first. I think TJ was even more so. He just we kept thinking like, okay, this guy's he's a salesman in a way.
Yeah.
And
right.
But in the best possible way. But, you know, but it just made us cautious, I guess, at first. Like, you know, what are his motives? Why? And then you just start to learn that. This is just who this guy is. You know, he's a really genuine person who wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's also just one of the most charismatic people I've ever met in my entire life.
How cautious was here the school community of you, outsiders, few of the white people other than the football staff on campus?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to quantify how cautious the community was, but I mean, it was definitely, you know, we've talked about it before, the idea that in communities like North Memphis, in particular, you know, a lot of times if there is like a media presence, they're there to usually do like a sensationalized story about how violent the community is, and then they're out, you know, or how crime-ridden the community is. And so here we are as outsiders from LA coming in saying, hey, yeah, we want to do a movie about the football story. And these couple guys with, you know, these cameras running around the town, I think we kind of earn the trust of the players pretty quickly within the first couple weeks of being there. And then after that, it was really a matter of earning the trust of the teachers at the school, earning the trust of the greater community. And we really kind of took a page from Bill's book in North Memphis, there's kind of we found that there's a lot of broken promises and there's a lot of inconsistencies. And so for us, it was just really a matter of showing up every day, showing up to, you know, various school events that we knew would, like talent shows, we knew wouldn't make the film. But that was part of the process of showing the community that we're here to tell their story and to tell their story responsibly.
So you got all the hours of footage, and we'll talk about how many hours. It was 500 hours. I think you guys also taught a class there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. We're going to talk about it and continue the conversation. I'm Mike Pesca in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the new Oscar-nominated documentary, Undefeated, and what goes into reinventing the story of overcoming the odds. I'm here today with co-directors Daniel Lindsay and TJ Martin. Their new documentary, Undefeated, following the Manassas High School Tigers football team in North Memphis, Tennessee. It's out in limited release this month. Check local listings, as they say. You can watch the trailer at our website, onpointradio.org, and hear from the documentary, Undefeated, the central subject. Volunteer coach Bill Courtney details what he's up against at Manassas High.
Let's see here. Starting right guard shot, no longer in school. Starting wheel linebacker shot, no longer in school. Two players fighting right in front of the coach when he's trying to make things work out. Starting center arrested for shooting somebody in the face with a BB gun. Most coaches, that would be pretty much a career's worth of crap to deal with. I think that sums up the last 2 weeks for me. And you know what? I know damn good and well what I sign up for every year. And I keep coming back.
He's great to listen to, but, you know, statements like that also help the narrative along, and you need these signposts when you're making a documentary. How aware do you think Bill Courtney was? Certainly he was mic'd all the time. How aware of was he of your cameras?
I mean, that's a question you probably got to ask him. But our sense was that I think at the beginning Bill was kind of aware. I think, you know, there's definitely times I know we caught him while we were filming that he had no idea we were there, and would forget we were there, especially in the practice field. But, you know, Bill is naturally in his everyday life, like when he comes on and you talk to him, he's just kind of a storyteller in general.
Right.
And I think that's just the way he communicates with people. He's a very good communicator. And one of the ways he does that is through storytelling. So, I mean, you know, that's a gem of a character when you're a documentary filmmaker, to have somebody who can eloquently speak like that.
And as far as methodology, you know, Frederick Wiseman will just put a camera in a room and let it run forever. The Mizell brothers, they're very influenced by psychology, and they very much believed in the fly on the wall. Their ultimate goal is just to make you forget that they were there. But then again, there's something to be said for the filmmaker who asks questions in interview format. Where do you guys stand on that?
I think, you know, for us, it really depends on the story. I mean, we're generally speaking, we're more interested in at least in the documentary space of making films that are less anecdotal, where the action actually unfolds in front of the camera. So, and then in the case of Undefeated, you know, we did go into it, you know, wanting to kind of immerse ourselves and embed ourselves with the team to the point where we just kind of disappeared and we became one of the players, so that the audience kind of becomes an extension of the team and it becomes much more of an experiential film. You know, when we discovered the world of North Memphis and some of the characters, we realized that we kind of stumbled upon a world where, you know, a lot of the players were very, very soon, very early on, very emotionally candid in front of the camera. We knew that was something special. So for us, it was a matter of just showing up all the time and doing our best to leave the smallest footprint and not draw any attention to ourselves, so that they can be as relaxed as possible, and we can kind of capture, you know, literally be a fly on the wall and kind of capture life in action.
I was just going to say, for us, you know, I think it's, we are interested in the relationship between the filmmaker and the subject. And really feel like that is what you ultimately as an audience member are watching. And so it is about putting in the time to really get to know your subject and be around, so that you can get those intimate moments and understand those kind of intimate details of their lives.
Well, one of the subjects you bring to life, we talked about Coach Bill Courtney, we talked about O.C. Brown, the huge, highly recruited offensive lineman. Then there was the small, lightly recruited offensive lineman, Montrell Money Brown. You know, Coach Courtney says, you don't do it for all the kids. Sometimes you do it for just one kid. I, by the way, don't believe him, but I don't believe that he thinks that, but if there was one kid that he was doing it for, it was the kid who showed up early to work out in the gym, even though he was an undersized offensive lineman. Here's a little bit of Money Brown.
I'm the smallest lineman. Like, I was the smallest lineman on offensive line last year. When I first noticed, I was like, I'm the littlest thing on line. Everybody else is all big and wide, and I was just small. But I feel like a giant, but when you stand next to them, I'm like a little baby.
I feel like a giant when you stand next to them. I'm a little baby. You had a third subject, Chavis Daniels, who was a linebacker and defensive tackle. Here's the problem. You follow three guys on the team and not one touches the ball. Like, no running backs, wide receivers, or quarterbacks. At what point do you say, have we made a huge mistake?
Yeah, we told you we didn't play football, so...
but you knew who touches the ball. You know who's on most highlights, yeah.
It was never... I mean, you know, we were always more interested in character. I mean, in fact, for a long time, we weren't even really wanting to make a football movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought football would be this kind of entry point in, but we maybe wouldn't even show many of the games and stuff like that. But we just, as the season was going on, we couldn't deny the fact that the drama was happening on the field and that this season was becoming very remarkable. And so, you know, we thought the team is a character. And so you're rooting for the team. And so if the quarterback scores a touchdown or the running back, that, you know, that should reflect on the team. But in terms of the personal stories, it was more important that we zero in on characters that were going to have the potential for a dramatic arc. Because, again, we wanted to make something where an audience would maybe forget they were watching a documentary. And you could kind of lose yourself in this story that kind of plays out like a natural three-act structure.
Yeah, the season was really quite amazing. They hadn't made the playoffs in years and years, and I think had never won a game in the history of the school. And it's natural to frame a documentary around a competition, right? Your last documentary was about a competition. Was it beer pong?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Done your homework.
Yeah. So how could you not do that? Now, we alluded to how many hours of footage you had. You were there for the whole season and before the season in 9 months, and it amounted to how much footage?
500 hours of footage.
Now, here's the thing. You hear that every time you hear about a documentary, they put a big number. But 500 hours, if I'm doing my math right, isn't that 3 weeks if you put it on a nonstop loop? Isn't that, doesn't 500 hours, I mean, right? 24 yeah. hours in a day times 10 times 20 is 480. So, yeah, you had about 3 weeks of footage. That's too much, guys, isn't it?
It took us 3.5 months just to watch the footage. Like, we split it in half, and TJ would watch 250 hours, and I watched 250 hours to take logging notes and stuff. And then TJ cut the stuff that I watched, and I cut the stuff that he watched. And that was the way we were able, over a time, to be able to actually watch everything that we had. But it was intense. I would not recommend it.
Definitely don't recommend that shooting ratio.
Well, you know, guiding you through this and helping you along, popping unbelievably on film, is this coach we've been talking about, Bill Courtney, a central character in Undefeated, the former volunteer coach for North Memphis's Manassas Tigers. He's the co-founder of Man Rise, a foundation dedicated to raising money for the Manassas High School football team. Bill Courtney is here with us. Coach, thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm great. What are you most proud of that the movie revealed?
You know, I guess if you're willing to put preconceived notions aside, if you're willing to put creed aside, if you're willing to put race aside, if you're willing to put all of the things that our society tells us we're supposed to think about one another aside, and just work for a common goal and not really care who gets the credit, just more care about what you accomplish together, and you level the playing field for people who desperately need it, then it will be inspiring and amazing what you can accomplish with one another.
Bill, I'm going to play a clip of you to you. This is here's the situation. You suffered a major 24-14 loss in your first game, and then later you're down at halftime. You're down 20-0, I think. And, you know, every coach has got to try to inspire his team. So here's what you say.
This is an unbelievably good opportunity. You come back from that, now you're talking about something. You lay down on that, well, then you forgot what we're about. I do not want to see anybody dropping their head. I want to see us get a stop and score and see what happens. Can we do that?
Did you believe yourself at that point?
It probably sounds very disingenuous.
No, no. What I mean is I was inspired, but I'm wondering as coach have got to say, look, I got to say something.
It probably does sound very disingenuous to your listeners when I say this, but absolutely, I believed it or I wouldn't have said it. Those kids for years had been taught that character is not how you handle your successes, but how you handle your failures, and have been taught that real young men have resilience, and that the difference in a young man and a punk is being willing to look your adversaries and your adversarial situations in the face and meet them head on. And I knew my kids, I knew our kids, I knew our coaches had that in them, and they just needed to get refocused. And I absolutely believed it. Yes, I wouldn't have said it.
How do you come by your inspirational style? Part church, part running a business, part watching other football films and the halftime of NFL on Fox?
The NFL on Fox, no.
Okay.
the question itself is an enormous compliment, and I appreciate you asking that. I truly, honestly don't know. I loved those kids, and I was willing to give them my heart, and I was willing to speak to them, and I was surrounded by a bunch of coaches who felt the same way, and we as a group were able to have a profound effect on a bunch of young men who, by the way, had a profound effect on us as well.
You know, football coaches are usually comfortable being portrayed as the hard man and the tough guy, but what about all the instances in the documentary that really showed your vulnerable side? Do you have any hesitation with having that be revealed?
Just that when I cry, one of my three chins jiggles a lot. Embarrassing. No. I mean, look, the truth is there's 498 hours of film left laying on the floor, and there's probably some instances in there that I'm not real proud of, and there's plenty of times that I chewed on butt when it needed to get chewed on. But here's the deal. If you lead by first serving, and you love, and you really love, and you give a consistent love, not because of, but in spite of, and the kids feel it and know it, then they'll take any butt chewing you want to give them, because they know at the end of the day, it's because you love them and care about them and want them to succeed, and they'll take it right. However, if you're one of these, I got the whistle, I got the hat, my name's on the door coaches, and you just start ripping people and expect them to respect you because you've got the title, then you're going to lose kids' hearts and minds, and you're not going to get done what you want to get done.
Beyond football, but for an amazingly transcendent, charismatic, self-sacrificing guy like you, do the Manassas high schools of the world, the students, even the non-football students, do they have a chance?
Wow. So... don't have time to answer that question properly, but I will say this. Prior to my 6 years at Manassas, I would have said we live in a free capitalistic society and everybody has equal chances. I didn't come from any money.
Right.
My father left when I was young, and I made myself a success, and that would have been my answer to you. Now I will tell you that some kids live in a generational black hole where everyone that they see, not everyone, but the vast majority of adults they see around them are not going to work every day and are not taking care of their responsibilities. And you gotta you got to feel that that has a distinct impression on a young man's view of how the world works and the impossibilities of getting out of that world. And I don't need to make excuses or political statement on any of this. I will just tell you that the playing field is not level.
This is probably a question that you don't get every year, but what are your Oscar plans this year, Bill?
Well, first I had to get a tux because I put on my old tux and I look like Chris Farley down by the river, so that was one. And then I'm flying out. Actually, we're leaving the house the minute I hang up the phone with you. I'm flying out there and going to a couple of cool parties, catching up with your other two guests and hopefully visiting with them and seeing some friends I have in L.A. And then going to the Oscars and you know, at the end of the day, just kind of keeping it real because I'm not an actor. This wasn't a script. This really isn't about me. The Academy Awards celebrate artists doing their best work. That's not who I am. That's the directors and the producers of this thing, and it's to celebrate them. And I'm just fortunate to get to kind of tag along and see how it all goes and enjoy it. So that's pretty much my involvement in it.
TJ, is Bill your date or Dan's?
Both of our dates.
Yeah.
there's enough for me for both of them to go with.
Bill Courtney, former coach of the Manassas High School Tigers. Thanks so much, Bill.
Thanks a lot for your interest, and go Tigers, and go Dan and TJ.
So Dan and TJ, we heard just how charismatic he is. With that, with the facts that unfolded, even though it's nonfiction, do you say we have to avoid cliche? Not just cliche in how we present the story, but even though it's real, can we fall into the trap of, you know, people thinking that, just people experiencing it as, oh, I've seen this before, even if it was, I've seen it in fiction films?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was kind of a combination of things. I mean, in some ways, we embraced the cliche because that is the way the season unfolded. We could have never in a million years predicted that the storylines would intersect in the way that they did and things would happen on the field the way that they did. And so in some ways, we embrace some of that. Like, I mean, we use the structure of sports films and there's a montage in the middle of our film where they like are getting better, you know. So we did some of that on purpose, but, you know, we also our approach tonally to things, I think, is to keep things a bit understated and not try to make something more than it needs to be. And so I think in some ways just presentationally too, just our taste in general, we shy away from that kind of over the top.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll talk about that montage and specific camera moves even. I was so taken by some of the technical stuff in the documentary. Here, this song is Brighter Tomorrow by the Soul Swingers. Somehow you got rights to it. I don't know how much it costs, but I know you documentarians don't have a lot of money for rights. This is one of the great songs from the documentary. The documentary is Undefeated. It's the story of the Manassas High School football team. I'm Mike Pesca in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Mike Peskin for Tom Ashbrook, talking about the art of documentary filmmaking. A particularly artfully done documentary, Undefeated, is our subject. I'm here today with Dan Lindsay and TJ Martin. They directed and edited the now Oscar-nominated documentary, Undefeated. Before we went to the break, guys, we were talking a little bit about a montage. Let's hear how that sounded. It looked really good, but let's listen to it.
Coach Courtney, we appreciate you calling. You guys are getting on a roll. Is it fair to say that it's an improvement week by week?
Yeah, it's real fair to say. It's discipline, it's coaching, it's teaching, and we're just trying to coach them up a little bit.
Dan and TJ, where'd you get that music? What music is that?
That's the Barons. They're actually from New Orleans.
Funk and soul band out of New Orleans. It's funny thing is we always laugh because, and now just hearing it and not seeing it, like the words, we always laugh because it's basically the guys in a way talking about a montage. We have so much to do in a short time to do it.
Yeah. Were you happy? Did you say to yourself, oh, we got to resort to a montage? Were you like, all right, let's show our chops in a slightly different way?
It was definitely the latter. We both come from an editorial background, and so every opportunity to do some, at least for me, every opportunity to do some a little bit more flashy presentational editing, I jump right on top of it.
Yeah, I noticed one play, a player goes out of bounds, and you take the camera with him, and then the camera keeps moving, and all of a sudden you're at practice the next day, and it's seamless, and I said, wow, that's skill.
Yeah. That's just a stupid mistake. One day I just lined up that shot and threw the thing and it just kind of happened. I was like, well, that's awesome.
There's this great moment where the coach gets great news about money, one of the players we're following. And I've seen this exact camera move in fiction films where you as the viewer are affected by the emotional impact of just the facts that are being presented, but you don't see the main character's face because two characters embrace and you're at the main character's back. And then the camera comes around, swings around in a circle, and then you get, in this case, Bill Courtney's face, and he's overcome with emotion. And again, the question was, you guys couldn't have been that good to plan it. That was a happy accident too?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, a combination of both. I mean, you're, as a documentary filmmaker, you have to be instinctive and think on your feet. And,
the kind of problem solving on your feet.
And so that was a combination of two things. One, I thought Bill's mic had gone out, and so I had a mic on my camera. And so I was like, well, I'll circle around and get it from the front because I thought I was missing his dialogue. And as I started to move, I heard him start to talk in my headphones. I was like, oh man, this would be bad. I was like, wait, no, I could just circle around here. I was like, and as I was doing, I was like, this looks awesome.
Right.
So it's, you know, a combination of happy accidents and, you know, being instinctive.
But that's a key moment in the film. Even though you have 500 hours of footage, there's no way you can't not show that moment. And am I right? That was the only choice you had? I mean, how many choices did you have of how to depict that awesome moment?
Oh yeah, no, that's it. And that was really kind of when we went into the film. It was like we either get it or we don't, because we're never going to. You know, oftentimes in documentaries, you'll say, "Oh, can we get a shot of you just walking through the door?" And then we'll get one coming out and stuff like that. We purposely never did that because we never wanted the players to be consciously thinking about the process. And so for us, it was like we either get it or we don't, and we need to be there for everything so we can capture those moments.
Part of getting that, though, I mean, part of getting that shot too is we kind of established a shooting style early on. So as long as you're following that shooting rhythm, we knew that, you know, you're talking to the crew right now. We did everything. We did sound. We did camera. We did catering. You know, everything. So we realized that. To make the film feel bigger, we were going to shoot on the long end of the lens and really do a lot of tights on faces because that's really where a lot of the motion is. So we kind of set that as our protocol or as our standard. So anytime you're in the field, you kind of already know how you're going to navigate a scene.
Right. Let's get a call. A few people who have been greatly affected by high school football and maybe even your movie. Rowan is calling from Lawrenceville, Georgia. Thanks for giving us a call, Rowan.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank Dan and TJ because they are, in fact, a part of the media, and it's surprising sometimes that every time you turn on the local news, you get all the bad stories that happen in any depressed community. And what these guys are showing here is that there's things that are so good that they're worthy of an Oscar nomination. So I just wanted to make that comment and thank those guys and the coach and the team.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
That's a good
comment. Thank you very much.
And when they do show a good story, a good high school sports story, the good story is usually the team that wins the championship, but that's not the only kind of good story, as I think the documentary points out.
Yeah.
Is that something you were going for or just happened? I mean, were you excited to show a story that – yeah.
Yeah, you know, it never mattered to us if they won every game, if they lost every game. You know, that was – the wins and losses were never – you know, obviously the film takes its shape by what happens. And so had they lost every game, it would be a different film, but we still would have – made it. I mean,
would have been about our characters. Yeah. It still would have been on their obstacles that they face and how they were going to kind of overcome those obstacles.
George is calling from Orlando, Florida. Hi, George.
Hi, Mike. This is George, and I just want to make a quick comment about the impact that a coach can have at that special time. I was a kid that came through the tough ways, and that guy coach was strong, and that he taught me, don't quit, don't be a thug. And here, you know, some 48 years later, I'm saying the same thing to the Pop Warner kids, and I can't wait to look at this film. I just turned on the radio, and I was moved so much about how a guy can, at a sixth grade, fifth grade level, turn a kid around, which is me.
Yeah.
It's powerful. Good stuff.
Kids need a coach as a father figure, too, which is important, and in the documentary. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, that's important when you say that. That the father figure, I mean, you think it's kind of cliche, but it's true. I mean, that was the only guy I had around me for the first 13, 14 years of my life back in 75. And it was like, you know, I was drawn to this guy like a bug to a sun. So it was good stuff.
Thank you very much for the call, George. How many fathers? Were there a lot of fathers in the picture of the students on the team? I know Money's dad was.
That were out of the picture?
No. How many kids were from single family homes, usually run by moms? Yeah.
I don't know the exact thing, but I think there was probably only out of 60 kids, probably maybe five that had a father in the home.
Yeah, I mean, out of all those kids, I think only two actually had both parents in the home. Yeah, and five actually with fathers.
Right. And so one of the issues that comes up about the film to reviewers, to people considering it, and I think comes up fairly, is the issue of race. You don't, you mentioned that, you know, it struck you in the beginning that OC was going to a guy's house and OC's black and the coach was white. But it's not addressed explicitly in the movie. As someone who watched the movie, by the end, it doesn't strike you as a failure. But what was the discussion between you two guys about how much race needs to be addressed or not addressed in the movie itself?
I think it was something that we were initially drawn to, and we thought it would be addressed a lot more in the film. But once we got there, and we kind of saw that it wasn't really an issue for the community in which we were profiling. You know, Bill doesn't look at his players as his black players, and nor do his players look at Bill as their white coach. You know, he looks at them as his football team, and they look at him as his coach. And so there was no reason for us to kind of infuse our curiosities or our weariness or our own questions of these kind of race dynamics. But with that said, we definitely were not going to kind of shy away from the socioeconomic realities of the world of North Memphis versus kind of the world of where the coaches come from. There was no reason for it to be necessarily part of the storyline.
We didn't want to be provocative for provocative's sake, you know, and it wasn't the reality for the kids. And so it's, you know, we are there as documentarians to observe and document and hopefully show people like our, you know, it's to boil down our experience, the 9 months that we lived there, into 2 hours. And, you know, for our experience, race was never a big issue. So if we tried to make it a big issue in the film, it would have been, I think, a little
irresponsible.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, though, it was really important for us to, you know, recognize that, you know, audiences are going to come in with their own preconceived notions. And the last thing you want is for someone to be critically thinking over the course of this film, because this is much more of an experiential film. You want them to get swept away in the storylines. So we did talk a lot about not wanting to make like a quote-unquote white knight story,
right,
where Bill is saving the kids. We do enter the storyline, the story in the world through Bill's lens, but we really wanted to make sure that it was a film about OC, a film about Chavis, a film about Money, and Bill is one of the four main characters. And then hopefully after these experiences and after you get swept away in the emotion of the story, I would hope that it would then inspire a greater dialogue about kind of our race and class dynamics in the U.S.
Right. When you experience the movie or the idea of the movie in a magazine article or a short interview on the radio, the listener or reader's mind will say, well, what about the racial dynamic? But after living through it, even if living through it 9 months or their whole lives, that question is answered. And I think that it succeeds in the documentary, because after an hour and a half of watching the documentary, though no one explicitly talks about it, it's just not hanging over the documentary as an unasked and unanswered question. I mean, the answer is there. It might not be, the words black and white might not be talked about more than two or three times, but the answer is there.
Well, the other thing is, we would never say that we're the authority on that. You know, we're not going to have any solutions of how to solve some of these greater issues. However, we would hope that it would inspire at just the beginning of that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, as filmmakers, documentary filmmakers especially, we're more interested in asking questions than giving answers. And so, there are documentary filmmakers that are kind of advocacy filmmakers, and they are really about trying to give answers. And I respect that and I appreciate that. But for us, our personalities, you know, it's just that's not something that we feel we are. It would be irresponsible if we started to tell people what to think.
Let's go to another call. Jim is calling from Thetford, Vermont. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Mike. This discussion puts me in mind of Hoop Dreams from many years ago. And I'm wondering whether the filmmakers have any thought to following up with their subjects sometime in the future to see where they've gone from their current experience.
Thanks for the call, Jim. It reminded a lot of people of Hoop Dreams just because we're talking about this small handful of excellent documentaries that happen to be about sports. And when they're excellent, they're usually also about society. One key way it wasn't like Hoop Dreams is it is Academy Award nominated. Hoop Dreams wasn't, and that was an injustice. Another big difference is that when you're following a football team, it's like, I cover sports. When you follow a basketball team, it's like following a small guerrilla band. It's manageable. When you follow a football team, it's like following an army. But what about that? I mean, Hoop Dreams must have come up as you were discussing your 500 hours of footage.
Hoop Dreams comes up every time me and TJ talk about documentaries.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
our favorite
documentary of all time. And, we've watched it so many times and just are kind of in awe of what Steve James was able to accomplish with that film. In terms of what happens with the players afterward, I mean, there is a small coda at the film, but for us, we were more interested in capturing a moment in time, and that kind of moment in adolescence where the world really is in front of you, and maybe there's that feeling that anything is possible, and we liked the juxtaposition of that idea against a world where a lot of people think those possibilities don't exist. And so for us, that we want this to be a living, breathing thing of that moment in time that when we were there. Now, having said that, I think it would be fascinating, depending on how well this film is received, in 10 years, I'd love to know what happens to those guys, because I think there's a promise in the film that's kind of sold of like that things are going to work out. And in the reality of life, I don't know that they will, or, it's – again,
you don't really know what direction it can go.
Yeah.
But,
as far as following up, I don't think we'd ever – I mean, we may follow up with – I don't think we would necessarily follow up with a camera, but we personally keep in touch
with
everybody.
Oh, yeah. We stay in touch with
it. Yeah.
The other way it was like Hoop Dreams is I remember seeing Hoop Dreams in the theater, and there was a bigger lag time between the release of Hoop Dreams and the events depicted than even in your movie. But we're talking about sporting events that are sometimes 3 or 4 years old, and I remember – in Hoop Dreams, either AG or Gates, the two main characters, one of them was at the foul line. He was taking foul shots and he missed it. And I remember the crowd gasping. I probably did too. And then I said to myself, this is a 3-year-old foul shot, that speaks to the power of the movie. Your movie did the exact same thing. Steve James, the director of Hoop Dreams, is nothing but consistent. He was not nominated again for another excellent documentary this year.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. How were you? I think you deserve it, but do you have any idea? Do you actually know how you came to be nominated?
No. I mean, the inner workings of the Academy,
it's a mystery to us. Yeah, the shortlist was – we were not expecting to make the shortlist, the 15 on the shortlist.
You were not expected to make the 15.
Not at all.
Wow. And the last thing, I just feel that with documentaries, there's either a stigma, or the documentarians sometimes feel that they have to add the word "but" next to their description. It's an inspiring story of high school sports, but because, you think they're going to be cliched. So if I gave you the elevator pitch, each of you guys, what would it be with this movie? How do you pitch it as something that transcends and goes beyond what we've seen before?
It's funny. We always say that if we read about our film in a festival catalog, we probably wouldn't go see it because we'd be like, I've seen that before. So I think for us, it's not about an elevator pitch of what happens. It's more that it's the experience you go through in watching it. It is really an emotional roller coaster in a way. And it's all of the things, hopefully for us, that we loved growing up about going to the movies in a way. We want people to see this in a theater, because I think you do become moved by being able to kind of be a fly on the wall and watch these moments that we're able to capture. You know, in some ways, people have said to us, you know, you guys kind of caught lightning in a bottle. And in some ways, I think that's true. And that's the elevator pitch, is that you're just going to go and watch these kind of incredible moments.
Here's your pitch. Here's your pitch.
Go.
A friend of ours used to say that we should call the film Man Cry, and that's all you need to know.
Daniel, big man, tough man cry. Daniel Lindsay, TJ Martin, co-directors of Undefeated. It's nominated for an Oscar. The Weinstein Company bought it. It may be remade. All exciting things. Thank you guys so much, and good luck on Sunday.
Thank you very much.
We'll go out with a little music from the movie. This is the Undefeated theme. It's by Miles Nielsen and Daniel McMahon. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.